You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
David Means' latest book, The Spot, is a collection of 13 new short stories. His characters cover a wide range of types, from an adulterous divinity student to a gang of inept radicals to a father awaiting a potentially devastating diagnosis for his son. One reviewer raved, "David Means revives the American short story in this quietly compelling collection. It's as if the works of Poe and Kerouac had been rewritten by Cheever." The book is published by Faber & Faber, and I'm very pleased it has brought David Means to our show today. Hi.
Great to be here, Leonard.
In their desire to say wonderful things about you, reviews have not just compared you to Poe, Kerouac, and Cheever, but also Sherwood Anderson, Ernest Hemingway, Flannery O'Connor, Raymond Carver. That's a wide range. That's probably as wide-ranging as your choice of characters.
Yeah, well, you know, I tend to go all in a lot of different directions. I don't allow my imagination to sort of linger on one thing, and I let it go out where it needs to go. And when I land on something, then I write a story about it, if it works.
And you're everywhere, including one story that most New Yorkers can identify with. The protagonist of the first story in the collection, Knocking, is plagued by noise from his upstairs neighbor's apartment.
Yeah, I had that. I lived on Claremont Avenue years ago, and I had the prototypical knocking neighbor who you know, for one thing, the floors were incredibly thin, and he was a big knocker. I mean, he not only did he knock, but he also had a pipe organ, which added to the effect. So I stored that away for a long time. I sort of had that seed. And then finally, when the time came, I just let go and wrote the story.
Well, how many of the stories come out of a seed like that? Because I'd be afraid, considering some of these stories here, that you actually had personal experience.
I'll have to say that I'm not a confessor, so I'm not. I sort of hold my own life story close to the vest. I feel like it's a fuel for my work, and I can say that in my past I've had relationships with violence and with dysfunction, let's put it that way. But on the other side of the coin, a lot of it just comes out of my imagination.
And most readers would like to believe that it does come out of personal experience, but I talk to writers all the time who say, you know, there was a sound I heard, or I suddenly saw an image of something, and that got me thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, this is a cliche almost to say, but the imagination is a profoundly powerful force. And we live in an age of where there's it's been going on a long time. There's a desire for authenticity, you know, a seal, a stamp of authenticity on the part of the writer. I've never bought into that at all. I feel that the writer has a right to write about anything he or she wants.
Although you would be described as a realist.
I'm a problematic realist. I mean, I'm a realist. I mean, my job as a writer is to, and I think Flannery O'Connor said this kind of thing, grab reality, grapple with reality, find a way to understand the truth of reality.
And there's something that, something about the short story that allows you to do it in a way that you can't do in a longer form.
Yeah.
Because it's just so intense. Jess Rowe, reviewing the collection in the Sunday Times Book Review, noted that most of your characters aren't burdened with a lot of personal history. They seem to exist at one particular moment, and very little background is given about their life or justification for their actions. And this is something that can make a short story very, very intense.
Yeah, you can go right in, get incredibly close to the predicament, the situation that the character is in, and dig into that. And you don't have to go into all the background material. And a lot of my characters are drifters. They're alone. They're isolated. I mean, I do give background. You do know the situation.
Although Jesse Rowe also points out that the father who brings his son to be tested for cystic fibrosis is an exception to that rule.
I don't think so. I mean, I shouldn't say anything about a reviewer. A writer should just stay quiet. But I mean, that story takes a big leap partway through, and it goes into the internal mind of the character as he thinks about a therapy session that he's going to have. I don't really see that story as being any different from the other stories in the book, except it was about a father, and it's about parenting and fatherhood, which is a subject that I hope eventually to get to someday.
Well, you were a stay-at-home dad, weren't you?
Yes,
raising twins?
I raised twins. They're graduating from high school today.
So when, as a stay-at-home dad, did you find time to write when they were in school?
When they were really little, after I listened to your show, I would go and I'd get them to go to sleep, and then I'd run down to my office and try to write. At that time, I think I was at the beginning of when they were really young, trying to write a novel. And I would just squeeze it in there when I could. And then maybe that's part of the reason why I didn't write the novel. It didn't work, and I just went back to writing the stories.
Are you more comfortable writing stories?
I am. It's what I do, and there's a tremendous pressure to write a novel, economic, financial, and it's cultural, too. The culture wants a novel. It does what I want it to do for me as a writer. It gets me where I want to go. I can get in and get out and be done with it. And the most important thing is when a story doesn't work, I can throw it away and not feel too horrible about it. Not have to cry for weeks. I just say, okay, this one didn't work. I'm going to put it aside.
Mike, and sometimes those stories are the germ of another story, aren't they?
Sometimes they sit around for a few years, and then I take them out of a folder and revise.
David Means, the latest collection of short stories is called The Spot. It's published by Faber & Faber. What about the title, The Spot? The word can evoke any number of different associations, from X marks the spot to the so-called G-spot to the concept of a spot as a blemish or a stain of guilt, as in Macbeth.
Absolutely, yeah.
All of the above?
I wanted to find, you have to name a collection after a story, which is really a daunting thing because you don't really want to do that. It feels like you're leaving all the other stories out. Part of it was that story in particular I like a lot. And also it's short, memorable. I named a collection Assorted Fire Events and no one could ever remember that. So I sort of said, okay, I'm going to go with The Spot. I'll go shorter. And that's basically it.
There are several very different stories here that touch on the power of the story.
Yeah.
This is something, I'm sure, that all writers think about. Yeah. But you decided to actually make it the subject of stories?
Well, I think it's more of the power of telling a story and laying a story out for the characters in the stories that I'm writing. For example, in one story, The Blade, the character actually doesn't tell his story. He withholds it from the men around the campfire. So
this is a conversation of hobos around a campfire.
Yeah, and he doesn't give the story away. He doesn't, and he's holding it. But you, the reader, are privy to the complete picture. You get to see it. So it's probably even more complicated than that as a reader. You're getting to actually hold both things at the same time.
There's another story about narrative called Reading Chekhov.
Yeah.
It's about an adulterous, very well-educated couple looking to Chekhov to give them some insight into their own situation?
Not really. You know what? They're in that little park up near Claremont Avenue, Riverside, right across from Grant's tomb. It's a summer adultery story, and they're lying on a blanket in the sun, reading from The Lady with the Pet Dog to each other. I mean, it's basically just part of the story. It's a Chekhovian story in that it's about adultery. It's trying to unfold the wide picture of this adultery. But unlike Chekhov, I see the Chekhov story as having a happy ending. I mean, they are together, and it projects into the future as a relationship that's ongoing. In this story, it doesn't happen.
He's a part-time student at Union Seminary who later become a minister of a church up the Hudson. And he calls adultery multifaceted, but he never seems to consider the facet of sin as one of them.
Yeah, I mean, and it's there because the story actually begins looking out of that building. It's an insurance building right next to Riverside Church, and he's looking out at the Carillion, at the tower where the Carillions are playing. And he's listening to the music, and of course he's a seminary student, so he's immersed in theology. But at the same time, he isn't willing to look at himself. He's not willing to see where he is.
Well, he thinks that the situation was brought about through God's intent.
Right. He's a little
that
confused.
That can be convenient, isn't it? But there are any number of stories here that have to do with God and religion.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's problematic for me to confess that I'm a religious person in this culture and climate. I mean, I want people to read my stories and read them, but I am. I mean, I do have beliefs, and I do practice them, and I'm concerned. And it's just that in this culture, you can't be Flannery O'Connor. You can't go around, you know, saying this is exactly what I am and this is exactly how you should see my work. You just can't do that.
Well, did the religious convictions in some way affect the way you would tell a story?
I think so in an incredibly deep way.
Because it sure did with Flannery O'Connor. But you can read Flannery O'Connor and not be aware of it until you're aware of what her life was all about and her ideas were outside of the writing of the story.
Right. Because your job as an artist is, and she would say this, is to be stupid enough. And this is what she said, to be, it takes a kind of stupidity to stare bluntly at what's there. And if you're thinking about religion or belief, then you're not really looking. You know, it's blurred. You're looking through a filter, and it doesn't work.
One of your stories, Facts Toward Understanding the Spontaneous Human Combustion of Errol McGee, is also a story about trying to hit on the right story to explain a tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that one actually, because I just kept trying to hit on the story myself.
And it autobiographical ended up being, in an odd way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that story used a lot of my growing up in Michigan and a lot of sort of material from my real life.
But place is really important in these stories. I mean, you're all over the place. The settings range from the Midwest to Westchester, the suburbs, to Manhattan.
Yeah.
How important is the concept of place to the story itself?
You know, only in retrospect, if you look at a story like a real story, like a man in Nyack who lived near me getting up in the morning, getting on the train in Tarrytown, going down the river past those boats with their blue tarps, going under the tunnel, getting up, and then going down to down to the World Trade Center, going up to his office, and then on a particular day at a particular time, and you know, and facing his demise. Then in retrospect, looking back, the landscape has an almost mythic power behind it. The river, even the blue tarps, you know, everything in that scene would indicate that the landscape is playing a role. But that's really a retroactive sort of feeling, I think. It comes out of just looking carefully and describing what's there in the context of the story itself.
Well, the previous collection, Assorted Fire Events, they were all connected through geography, but that's not true here.
Is there
some through line as far?
No, I just go where my, you know, like I always stop in Cleveland on the way to Michigan each summer, and I go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we stay at the same hotel, and I go out and look at the lake, and I notice that there's a plaque that says this is where the Cleveland water supply is drawn in. So, you know, every summer I would go and kind of stand there and take it in and really look and really just take it in, and then eventually it came out in a story. It came up in the spot. I guess I do drift around a lot. I like wandering, and I love sort of looking and seeing what's there.
David Mean's previous books are Assorted Fire Events and The Secret Goldfish. He's received numerous awards, including the Los Angeles Times Book Prize and the Pushcart Prize, also the O. Henry Prize. His short fiction has appeared in all of the magazines you'd expect: The New Yorker, Harper's, Zoetrope, The Best American Short Stories, Best American Mystery Stories. His new collection is called The Spot, and it is published by Faber and Faber. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.